Last week, a man killed 8 people at 3 different spas in Atlanta, Georgia. 6 of those people were women of Asian descent. Authorities haven't said that the killings were racially motivated, and they noted that the shooter said his sex addiction was the reason for the crime. Many people of Asian descent have criticized that conclusion, pointing to the spike in violence against Asian Americans in the last year and the connections between violence against Asian women, misogyny, and racism. There's a long history in the United States of discrimination against people of Asian descent, stretching back to the mid-19th century when Chinese immigrants first came to America. We're learning about the history of anti-Asian discrimination and violence. Cindy Yifeng Chang is a professor of history and Asian American studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's also the author of Citizens of Asian America, Democracy and Race During the Cold War. Cindy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
This country is seeing increased violence against people of Asian descent. According to one study from California State University San Bernardino, anti-Asian crimes have increased 150% since the start of the pandemic. What have you noticed in the last year?
I definitely noticed an increase in the reported amount of violence that has occurred. But I think as we note, that the pandemic has created a lot of economic duress amongst many people. And in these moments, I think we have seen, once again, a real increase in the kind of level of verbal assaults and physical attacks against Asian Americans.
Do we know why this is happening?
I think for many of this, if we wanted to relate it to the shooting in particular, right, as you were mentioning, in the start of the programming, you start to see that there's a recent history that we see, right, of U.S. military engagement in South Korea, in the Philippines, and in Vietnam. In these areas with a lot of U.S. soldiers, there's usually next to it a military camp town where economically disenfranchised Asian women would have to work as sex workers. Sometimes they are called military comfort women. And this creates a particular kind of stereotype of women, Asian women, as sexually available. And this kind of assumption carries over to the United States here. So this kind of relationship between Asian women, quote unquote, sex work, has been kind of something that's quite prominent following the Korean War and the war in Vietnam. And you start to see this kind of association such that the shooter went to 3 different locations in 2 different counties in a state that has 4% Asian Americans. In Atlanta, there's 4.4% Asian Americans, something that you have to search for. They're quite a minority group, right? You really start to see this kind of stereotyping of Asian women play out. And so I think for this, it's very much, as you say, something that is very interrelated between race, between gender, and between a particular kind of misogynistic behavior.
Authorities said that the shooter was motivated by a sex addiction. Let's hear some of that.
He does claim that it was not racially motivated. He apparently has an issue, what he considers a sex addiction, and sees these locations as a temptation for him that he wanted to eliminate.
So this really connects back to what you were just saying. We've heard experts speak out and say that there are these connections between violence against Asian women, misogyny, and anti-Asian racism. Talk more about that.
Yes. We also, as you noted, that this type of anti-Asian sentiment that we are seeing spike during the pandemic, right, where a particular neutral term that we have assumed, something like, you know, calling the virus, let's say China virus, implies a sense of neutral term that we're just indicating where the virus, one of its originating points. The reason I say one is that many of us have relatives and friends that we know who have tested positive, and they certainly didn't travel to Wuhan, China to get it. There's many different points of contact, but scientists believe that it did originate in Wuhan, that it has this neutral geographic term. We see that being used as a particular kind of stigma, right, against China in a trade war against people of Asian descent in the United States in a way to denigrate them as a verbal assault, to intimidate them. We see these types of anti-Asian spike during this time. And that the current situation, as you're asking me to talk about, is what we have said is historically rooted. One context that I had spoken about, again, is about the kind of U.S. military culture, right, of sex worker camp towns. There are other major incidences throughout U.S. history, right? One of the key things that many people are very aware of is the Chinese Exclusion Act. A lot of times in my classroom, when we have more time, the bigger context that we study is that prior to the passage of the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act, there was another federal policy called the Page Act, 1875, that was to bar the immigration of Chinese women to the United States because it was assumed, right, it's that stereotype that all Chinese women were prostitutes. And while it was not federally enforced, right, 1882, Chinese became the first federally enforced immigration restriction in the United States. The question we ask is, why? What was so important about restricting women, Chinese women, and restricting Chinese workers, right? Why is the relationship between race and gender completely interrelated, right? And the question is that although the popular thing that we say is that Chinese exclusion is because there is a racial scapegoating during economic time, instead of looking at different industries.
Cindy, I can't hear you anymore.
We also see that. Oh, sorry. Can you hear me right now?
I think we just had a bit of a blip. Go ahead. Please continue.
Yes. We start to see that a lot of times when we talk about Chinese exclusion, we say that we focus on the labor aspect, right? That in economic recession, we don't look at industries and what they are, the policies that they have imposed, government policies to create recession. We look at the workers and we say, it's that immigrant worker that stole my job. But we also start to see during the same time, there is this belief that interracial coupling between white men and Chinese women was polluting, right? At that time, there was a belief that these kinds of interracial intimacies would pollute the white blood. And so from a very early on, the first ever immigration restriction, right, was already against both women and workers of Asian descent. So I think this thing that we're starting to see has a longer history, but it's definitely rooted in very recent histories as well.
We're talking with Cindy Ethan Chang, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you Asian American? How did you react to the shootings in Atlanta, from hearing what the motivations of the shooter were to the reality that six of the eight people killed were Asian women? How do you feel about the fact that these haven't been categorized as racially motivated? What's your experience like? 800-642-1234 is the number to call to share your story. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Cindy, I think that's what's so striking about this, what you just mentioned, saying that it's rooted way back in history, but also in recent history. I mean, in listening to you, you've gone from the 1850s to the 1870s and then into the 1900s. I mean, there are layers here of acts that have restricted Asian Americans in this country.
Yes. And I think that this is what we're starting to see is a time, you know, I know it goes back to very basic fundamental understandings about the power of stereotypes, right? Is that what stereotypes do is that it creates generalization and it reduces the complexity, the humanity of a group of people into one or two characteristics. What you start to see in this particular kind of way we've talked about sexual addiction, how it's connected, right, is that you start to see that there was a generalization, a stereotype of the availability of Asian women as sex workers. And instead of looking at them as complex people who are economically disenfranchised, that they had to work as essential workers during a pandemic, who are vulnerable, who have sons to support, who have families, who are people who are, you know, they're economically responsible for other lives, that they have to work. They're part of the essential workers of our pandemic. Instead of looking at the complexities of who they are, they get reduced into this one or two characteristics as quote unquote sex workers. And I think many people would have issue in terms of a particular kind of social stigma against sex workers, against people who have to work for a living, and would just, you know, go around. Again, this is very intentional, picking three different areas in two different counties in a state with very, very small Asian American population. This is very targeted, and that it reduces the complexities of these people into this one stereotype about Asian American women in particular. And I think it's also really important to note that the leading South Korean daily, their leading newspaper of the country, interviewed eyewitnesses who escaped this rampage. And they heard him say that he was going to kill all the Asians. And I would also think it's important for law. I'm curious to see how our law enforcement, if they actually went and interviewed these eyewitnesses, because it's reported all over Korean media. It is reported all over Korean media. And throughout history, we start to see the power of stereotypes, right? Of how, again, the complexities of groups of people gets reduced to one or two things, that they become easy targets of verbal attacks and physical assault.
We're going over the history of discrimination and violence against people of Asian descent with UW-Madison Professor Cindy Ethan Chang, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. You can also send us a tweet at Central Time WPR. Cindy, one moment in history we haven't talked about in the last, 170 years is what happened with Japanese Americans and Japanese immigrants during the Second World War here in America. How has internment shaped American history and then, you know, the lives of Asian Americans even today?
Yes, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's also a very, really great example that ties to the recent Atlanta shooting. And what we start to see in Japanese incarceration during World War II is that a particular situation between Japan and the United States changed in World War II. Japan became the enemy of the United States with the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And what happens is when a particular political or economic situation between the U.S. and an Asian country change, there's always a lingering question: should it or does it impact the lives of Asians in the United States? And the fact that it does shows that for Asians, no matter how many generations they've been in the United States, whether they were born here or not, there's always this perception that they're foreign. They're not really quite American. And what we start to see is that the loyalties of Japanese Americans, two-thirds of those who were incarcerated were in fact American-born, were immediately perceived as foreign. And this gets to what we talked about in terms of racial stereotyping. They are, again, perceived not the complexity of the humanity. We did not go case by case. The reason we see it as a racial issue and not just national security is no matter who you are, if you have Japanese descent, you were incarcerated. We didn't give them trial. We didn't do it. We just wholesale blanketly incarcerated 120,000 Japanese and Japanese Americans in the United States from the Pacific Coast. And we also think this is really important because we compare it with other ethnic groups, Germans and Italians. Germany and Italy were also powers that the United States was, at war with. And while some German Americans and Italian Americans definitely got their loyalties questioned, it wasn't this entire wholesale mass incarceration, such that kids, babies were also similarly interned. So I think what we start to see in terms of Asian American situation is that when there are changing circumstances, like right now, there's a trade war between US and China, there's a pandemic that originated in Wuhan, immediately there is a suspicion against Asians in the United States, verbal assaults, And this leads Asian Americans to question, like, no matter how many generations they are in the United States, born or not, can they belong? Is the color line that strong? Right? Are they always going to be perceived as foreigners? And so I think this is, you know, this is what a lot of these kinds of anti-Asian attacks make us think about.
We're talking with Cindy Ifan Chang, who is a professor of history and Asian American studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we are talking about the rise of violence against Asian Americans here. And we've got Carol in Madison ready to talk with us. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I just wanted to say that the white supremacy and xenophobia has always been an ugly underbelly in the United States, but I believe our former despicable president let those cockroaches out from under the rocks and from the wood, and we have him to blame. I put the recent attacks on Asians squarely on his shoulders for the despicable remarks he made about China and the COVID-19 virus.
Okay, Carol, thanks for that input there. And while former President Donald Trump is not specifically responsible for this, I do wonder, to Carol's point, how much our leaders say matters. How much of this, Cindy, is about the messaging? And if our elected officials take a hard line against white supremacy, against discrimination against any people of color, Asian Americans, you know, how much of a difference does that make when this is systematic and historical?
Excellent question. And thank you, Carol, for that remark. I mean, I think the history of, as you say, of xenophobia and of racism in the United States, it cannot necessarily be on any one person's shoulder. It's obviously something that is historically rooted. However, what you point out is absolutely important in that there are people that have greater power, greater visibility, a much more bigger platform. And how they conduct themselves, their sense of character, what comes out, they start to represent ideas of who we are as a nation. And I think to, very casually mock and refer to this particular virus as a China virus, in a way to mock China, in a way to denigrate a particular group of people, that definitely will impact people. It will empower people to think that's actually okay. And once again, they can hide under the cloak of this is a neutral term referring to some geographic area where this virus originated. However, the way it's directed, the stigma that it thinks, how it allows and has increased a particular tense environment, how it encourages attacks, verbal assaults against Asian Americans. That's, you know, we are living in the time when we are seeing concrete evidence arise in reported violence. This particular mass shooting, that there's a serious racial issue here. And we need leaders who's going to take a stand against racism and xenophobia.
Do you think that matters? Do you think if our leaders unequivocally say this is unacceptable, that will help us get on a better course?
I hope so, because I hope that they translate their political rhetoric into institutional change. Because for us to really get at eradicating these kinds of racism, we have to talk about the inequities that this pandemic has shown in terms of housing, in terms of healthcare, in terms of food, and in terms of making ends meet. And we have to talk about all these things that's interrelated. Can people afford decent housing? Can people afford to get by month to month? I mean, all these important things. I mean, it's not just a simple thing of a tweet or a rhetoric. It has to be manifest in deep material changes, deep institutional fixes. And we have to be, as a nation, committed to that.
Cindy, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time and helping us to put this into context.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cindy Ifan Chang is a professor of history and Asian American studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.